Intelligent design and DNA. Scholars can't explain it all away. Get ready to be awed by the handiwork of God. Tune in to Real Science Radio. Turn up the Real Science Radio. Keeping it real.
Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. Welcome to Real Science Radio. I'm Bob Enyart.
And I'm Fred Williams, creation speaker and software engineer.
Two big science discoveries, Fred, in the last couple weeks. One is a WWB discovery, working for Walt Brown.
Working for Walt Brown, a Walt Brown sighting.
That's going to be fun because it's something that's basically already in Walt Brown's hydroplate theory. But the second discovery is a challenge to Walt's theory.
It's a challenge. It's a fun one, though. We'll talk about that.
Because we need both, right? We need the evidence that seems to affirm the theory. And then when there's something that seems to challenge the theory, we need to not pretend it doesn't exist, like evolutionists do.
Yeah.
But we need to acknowledge it and wrestle with it.
Yeah. I look forward to that.
So the first has to do with lightning bolts producing radioactive elements. That is so totally cool. When there's a storm, a thunderstorm, lightning bolts produce carbon-14, for example. And that's something that people who read Walt Brown, they've known about. But it was big news this past week.
It just occurred to me, this is going to be another rescue device for evolutionists. Because of all that carbon-14 out there, they're just going to say there's lots of lightning strikes everywhere.
Yeah.
Like in diamonds beneath the Earth's surface.
Oh, right, right. Yeah.
All those fossilized dinosaur bones.
Yeah, there's carbon-14 everywhere it shouldn't be.
Yep.
So this could end up being a rescue device, right?
Yep.
Because we know about all the lightning strikes inside of diamonds, right? Happens all the time.
All the time.
Yes.
It's amazing.
So
the second is the discovery of an asteroid. It looks like it came from outside the solar system.
Wow.
This thing's a real hot dog, actually, because it's shaped like one. We'll talk about that later.
Yeah, it's real long, oblong.
Yeah. 10-to-1 ratio.
Yes. Yeah, so with Walt's theory, the asteroids, comets, meteoroids, all these dangerous bullets in the solar system, they all came from the debris of the fountains launching them out into space.
Yeah, the fountains of the great deep.
All the stuff that wasn't part of God's perfect original creation, but part of the judgment. Well, if this thing came from outside of the solar system, then that doesn't fit in nice and pretty like with the model.
That's right. Even though it'd be like one out of, what, 700,000 rocks in the sky.
Right.
It still doesn't feel right, right?
Right.
It's perfect creation. It was very good.
Yes.
You wouldn't expect something like this.
No, you wouldn't. Just like you wouldn't expect uranium and radioactivity on the surface of the Earth when God created Adam and Eve.
And that's such a great point. One of my favorite shows was The Origin of Radioactivity. And Dr. Walt Brown, Walt Brown sighting, he's really the first one to explain the origin
of
radioactivity.
Of Earth's radioactivity.
It was not here at the time of creation.
Yes. That is an awesome show. If people want to listen to that, rsr.org/radioactivity. And in fact, the big discovery that we'll be talking about soon from this past week has to do with the production of radioactive elements by lightning. And that's totally part of Walt's model. So before we get to those, we have a couple of announcements. There's a debate tonight and a follow-on debate tomorrow. And we have an update from our show of 2 weeks ago. Fred, that was such an enjoyable program. And so part of that was so fun is we gave all these examples of how they keep saying they have to rewrite human history because they're finding things out of order. Just like with everything else, Fred, so much out of order.
Yep. This may cause us to rewrite human evolution.
Yes.
So 4 days later after the show.
Yes.
They're rewriting human history again.
Again. There's a paper published in the Journal of Physical Anthropology, and they're describing a skull that had been found earlier, but they're just realizing the implications, or at least they're coming to grips with the implications of the skull. And Fred, it's so fun how the media describe this. Like in Britain, they have the Independent newspaper out there, and they say a skull found in China could rewrite our entire understanding of human evolution.
Yeah, that is so cool. You know, I think evolution has got to be hating China. So many times things come out of China that cause this big squeeze. I remember this time they found a vertebrate in the Cambrian. I don't know if you remember that. And the Chinese scientists were saying, you know, this really, you know, there's some serious issues with neo-Darwinism.
Oh.
And I was surprised that one of those comments made it into the secular media. Did not make it into their journals. You know, they have to kowtow and bow down to evolution and not mention that, hey, this is a huge problem for the theory. But here it is again, China, thank you. Another great discovery from there that's putting the big squeeze on evolution.
And to have scientists say, hey, we have a problem with neo-Darwinism, something we should do in an upcoming show, Fred. In Germany, like around the world, the Darwinists went nuts. It was the 150th anniversary of the publication of Darwin's book, Origin of the Species. Yeah, back in 2009.
And then the racist comment that comes after, a truly racist comment. The full
on
title,
the
title of the book.
Survival of the Favored Races.
Favored Races.
Yeah. Charles Darwin was a racist. In fact, we have an article, Charles Darwin, in his own words, on American Right to Life's website, a definite racist, which is, of course, devastating whenever people are, for whatever reason, and in any period of human history. But in Germany, as in around the world, they had in their museums, their natural history museums, you know, celebrate Darwin week, month, year. And one of their leading museums, they had over 100,000 people come to this exhibit. And they showed scales where on one side of the scales was Charles Darwin's book, Origins. On the other side were all these creationist books, intelligent design books. And they showed that Darwin's one book was more weighty than all these other ones.
Oh, my goodness.
It was bogus, you know.
Yeah.
They were trying to show visually his writing is way more important
than
all
these.
They're
real into illusion.
Yes, right. Well, the curator of the museum, a Darwinist, completely credentialed, he said he made a huge mistake. He decided to read the books in the exhibit.
Oh, he never even had read them.
No, he hadn't read them. And when he read them.
Not surprising, but.
When he read, these were intelligent design books.
Yeah.
When he read them, he realized that they were correct and that Darwinism was false. And what a quandary he ended up being in, because he's the curator. And he went public.
Did he take the book off the scale, the Darwin book, Darwin's Origin?
No, I don't know the timing of when he read them before the exhibit, after, during, but he read them. So we'll have to get the details of that. The audience will enjoy hearing that even from his own lips.
Wow.
So when you mention that discoveries are made that scientists say, hey, this confronts evolution. Yeah, that happens all the time. And I just got a kick out of the Journal of Physical Anthropology talking about, okay, we may have to rewrite our understanding of human evolution.
How many times did we hear that?
4 days after we were laughing about it on the show.
Yep. So, Bob, you mentioned earlier the debate tonight. I'm really looking forward to this. These are going to be great. The one tonight, then there's a follow-on debate Saturday.
Tomorrow.
It's about the future, you know, God and the future. And it's also about, is God outside of time, which kind of plays into our creation, young earth, you know, Genesis 1.
Yes.
Was time created?
So these debates on the future, and is the future settled or is it open? So God is creative. Has God exhausted his creativity? Or when he makes the new earth, can he design a new flower if he wants to? Could he design a new pattern on a butterfly wing if he wants to? Or is the entire future settled?
In stone.
Is it yes.
Set in stone.
Like inexorable. And that God, we know that God is the creator. So his mind is so awesomely creative. But if the future is settled, in other words, everything that will ever happen is already settled, then God must have completed his creativity. In other words, everything he would ever design, any song he would ever write, any flower, any pattern on a butterfly's wing, he's done with it all. And if so, then why? Why would God have exhausted his creativity? The Bible doesn't seem to say that.
So this is interesting that this is even going to be a debate in a sense, right? So who are the people in the debate?
Okay. Will Duffy, who was for a long time the producer of Bob and Yurt Live and an elder of Denver Bible Church, he has organized and hosted some of the debates that I've done over the years. Well, Will now is debating himself, a very well-known theologian, the founder of CARM.
CARM, yeah, that's a popular website.
CARM.org.
Forum.
Matt Slick. Mm-hmm. So Matt Slick has been in ministry for decades. He's reached people all over the world by the millions. And so he's flying into Denver. And so he has flown into Denver. And this will be in person at Denver Bible Church. So if people can get there tonight, 6 o'clock, I'd recommend getting there a little bit early. Then you could see the debate live in person. But if you can't get there, you could go on Facebook. Actually, it'll be streamed live on YouTube. So on Facebook, if you search for The Great Debate,
it'll
probably pop up. But if you go to our website, rsr.org, you'll see the banners for the
ad. Prominently displayed.
Yes, and you could just click on the link for the first debate, and you'll see the countdown until it starts.
Yeah.
And so it's going to be so fun. And Fred, you and I, you're right. We've talked about this question of time, and many creationists say that Genesis tells us that God created time. I've been looking for that verse.
I haven't found that verse in Genesis.
No.
And it's amazing. A lot of the PowerPoint slides, they'll show God in that first week of creation. It'll include time.
Right. But Genesis says that God created matter and space. You know, he made the heavens mm-hmm. and the earth, light and life. Those four things, Genesis says God created: matter, space, light, and life. It doesn't say time.
Yeah, what they'll do is, I think, is in the beginning, you know, the first three
words.
But that doesn't mean time was created.
No, in fact, Jesus clarifies that in the Gospels. He says, in the beginning, God made them male and female. Well, he says, in the beginning of the creation.
Yes.
So just like if there's a seven-day feast, the Feast of Unleavened Bread, and it says, in the beginning of the feast. Well, in the beginning of the creation, God did this, then he did this, then he did this. So it doesn't say that God created time, although many or most philosophers say that God created time. But the Bible doesn't say
that. And that God is outside of time.
Yes.
Yeah.
So
I believed that for many years. I did. And it was only because I was taught that, you know, I kind of heard it a lot by secular, mm-hmm. but not just secular sources, but many Christians.
Christians. Very, yeah. It's common.
But then when I started reading verses that I was shown, you know, I kept losing this argument with people. It's like, oh, wait a minute.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay.
God is outside of time. And they say, well, how about this verse? How about this verse?
Yeah.
How about this verse?
Like,
if you ask Google, now Google doesn't know everything, do they? It's not omniscient. All right, I'm going to ask Google right now, okay?
Okay. I'll have to ask Alexa tonight. You know, we just got that thing from Amazon.
Yeah. Watch out for her.
Yeah.
So, Fred, is God outside of time? I'm asking Google.
Okay.
And you have to tell the audience, what does Google say right at the top here?
Not according to the Bible. The very first search item.
Yeah, out of like tens of millions of possible results, Google, when you ask, is God outside of time? Not according to the Bible, and it's an article and a radio program on a website, rsr.org.
Yep.
Sounds familiar, doesn't it?
204 million possible
web pages.
Yeah, and for that question.
So fun, because of all the pages that say God, that say outside, that say time, right? And so, hey, praise
God. That's
great.
It's the first one that shows up.
Yes.
And then people can be educated like I was. You know, I lost that argument.
Well, you know what's interesting? The other view that God is outside of time, they claim that God exists in an eternal now. They say he's atemporal. Everything is a simultaneity to him. It's all at once. There's no sequence. If there's sequence, then there's time. And so theologians will write books saying that God does not experience sequence. Everything for him is at once. So it's so interesting that if you think of the idea of foreknowledge, mm-hmm. prognosko in the Greek, foreknowledge, to know beforehand, if there's no time, there could be no foreknowledge, because foreknowledge is to know something before something else. Yet the Bible says that before the foundations of the earth, even that before,
yeah, before
the creation,
yes,
there couldn't be a before creation if God existed outside of time. But forget that one. Before the foundations of the earth, Christ was foreknown by the Father that he would save us.
Yeah.
If we needed saving, Christ was willing to save us. This was, Christ was foreknown. You can't know before something if there's no sequence, if you're not in time.
Yeah, if it's a simultaneous now. Interesting.
Yes. So it's interesting that when it really comes down to the scriptures, if you ask a Calvinist, could God have foreknowledge? If they're going to be consistent with their theology, they would have to say, well, that's just a figure of speech. That's an anthropomorphism.
Yeah, the anthropomorphism.
It's not, literally true of God.
That's another Christian saying uncle during a debate. In my opinion, it's like, you know you won the debate when you hear the word anthropomorphism. Sorry.
Yeah.
I mean, there are real anthropomorphisms in the Bible, but they're super obvious. Like,
right,
you know, Jesus is the door, things
yeah,
like that.
Right, exactly. But when Christ is foreknown, when God has foreknowledge, that's not a figure of speech.
It's not.
That is literally true of God, that he predestines and he has foreknowledge. And these are things that an atemporal being could not do or could not have.
Yeah. And in heaven, where there should be no time, because that's where God is.
There's tons of time.
30 minutes went by one time. I read about that.
A half hour of silence.
Yeah, a half hour.
Fred, and then the incarnation, that God for eternity past was not the Son of Man.
That is such a
good
argument.
God the Son. Right? Was God the Son always the Son of Man? God forbid. Me genoito, as Paul would put it.
Hmm.
Because if God was always the Son of Man, that means that God could not exist apart from man. And if God had to have an exhaustive foreknowledge, which included, say, Matt Slick, right? For eternity past, God always had Matt Slick in his mind, and if it weren't for Matt Slick in God's mind, God could not be God. That is not biblical theology. That's the kind of twisted knot you get in by following human philosophy.
Yep.
That's going to be in the debate tonight at 6:30 and tomorrow at 1 o'clock at Denver Bible Church, and we'll put the links to watch the live stream on YouTube right on our website, rsr.org. This is going to be a stellar debate, Fred, just stellar.
Yeah, and you've got, what, 5 cameramen? This thing, you're going
all
out.
We're going to do it right.
It tells me that you're planning on allowing this video to be produced.
Yes.
You have foreknowledge that this might go well for Will Duffy.
Well, Fred, it's funny you say that, right? Because theologians have said, look, the Bible mentions foreknowledge. That must mean the future is settled. It mentions sovereignty. That must mean the future is settled. It mentions having all knowledge. That must mean the future is settled. Well, all three of those things the Bible says about human beings. All three.
Mm-hmm.
That men were sovereign, that men had foreknowledge, and that men had all knowledge.
That is so interesting.
All three of those things. So those things don't inherently mean that the future is settled and not open. They don't mean that. And with the Bible overwhelmingly indicating God showing that the future is not settled, and you realize that the arguments that people have used to say the future is settled are so weak and so unbiblical, it gets really interesting. And the bottom line is it brings about a more relational Christianity, more relational.
Yeah.
Because if the future is settled, no matter what arguments you use for praying, your prayers are not going to affect the outcome of any situation.
Yeah, so why pray?
So why pray? And people say, well, because God says to.
Yeah.
But, that's a good reason, but God is not giving us make work. We're not in boot camp.
Yeah.
He doesn't say, okay, dig a hole. Why? Because I said so. Okay, now fill it in. Why? Because I said so. Now dig it again. Why? Because I said so. No, that's not what God in the Bible says. Jesus says, if you pray, you can move God's heart. If you pray, you can touch God's heart. You can move his hand if you pray.
Isn't that what happened to Hezekiah?
Hezekiah. Perfect example. What was that one again?
God told him, you're going to die.
How would you like
to hear that?
You're dying. Set your affairs in order. You're going to die.
Which means you're dying very soon if you're setting your affairs in order.
And Hezekiah, who's God's king, pleads with the Lord,
he prays.
And God says, because you've prayed, I'm adding 15 years to your life. In other words,
so was God just kidding all along, and he knew that he'd pray, and he foreknew all that?
Yeah.
And he predestined him to pray?
God doesn't mislead his own.
Yeah,
God. Right? He's not lying to Hezekiah. So these are all really interesting topics, but I think we better get to the science or we'll be fired.
But this was fun. I really enjoyed that. Yeah, I have to admit. So look forward to those debates.
Tonight's debate, Will Duffy versus Matt Slick at Denver Bible Church.
So this next one we mentioned earlier is another Walt Brown sighting. It's these lightning bolts that create radioactivity.
Yes.
This is reported in Nature magazine.
Oh, the journal Nature. Yeah. They say that lightning storms trigger atmospheric photonuclear reactions. That's a mouthful, right? In other words, they produce carbon-14 and other isotopes. So, Fred, this is part of Walt Brown's model.
It is.
Of where we got radioactivity in the crust of the earth.
Yeah, you can go read it. 7 years ago in 2010, he published this.
Right.
This theory with references to little known research showing that this happens.
That
this
lightning.
Atmospheric lightning produces radioisotopes.
Yes, right. And so how could that be? Well, if you have a strong enough electrical current, atoms will be stripped of their electrons and squeezed together like a Z-pinch. To where you're now building heavier nuclei, and some of them could be unstable. In different ways, when you're getting those kinds of forces, you have nuclear reactions. And part of that is in a thunderstorm, you end up creating carbon-14. Now, that's cool. I don't think it affects carbon-14 dating because we've measured the amount of carbon-14 in the atmosphere, and it's about one atom for every trillion carbon-12. So it's a significant ratio, but whether part of it is produced by lightning and the other part in the upper solar system, you know, wherever the source is, we know the ratio. So this is not directly relevant to that. At least that's not the big thing right away. The big thing is that science fans are saying, look at this. We just discovered a brand new way that radioactive elements are produced on the earth. And actually, no, this is part of Walt Brown's model of how heavier elements and unstable radioactive elements form on the crust of the earth.
Well, I like on our notes here that I'm sure you're going to have this on the website, this picture of lightning, and then you've got a little picture in the middle encased in it. Walt Brown was here. I love that. A little sign that says Walt Brown
was here. We have that from Comet 67P.
Yeah.
When the European Space Agency, they landed a craft on Comet 67P, and they saw it was made of millions of rounded boulders.
Yep.
And so we got a beautiful photo of that comet, and you see a little tiny sign on it or something down there, and we have a blow-up, like a magnification, and you can see it's a nice old wooden sign, Walt Brown was here.
Because he predicted that many years earlier.
Yes. And so now here's the same sign shows up on a headline of a science outlet where they say, lightning bolts create radioactivity, scientists discover, and there's a pier going out over the ocean, and there's a sign way at the end of the pier, and it says, Walt Brown was here.
That is so cool.
Yeah, just great. We will put it on today's show summary, along with the links to tonight's debate and tomorrow's debate. And then, Fred, another discovery, and this one challenges Walt Brown's model. This is an asteroid that was discovered, and the pronunciation of it, they first spotted it in Hawaii. So it has a Hawaiian name, Oumuamua.
Oumuamua.
Oumuamua. It reminds me of King Kamehameha.
Huh.
Remember that guy? The only royal palace on American territory was in Honolulu, on Oahu.
Huh.
And it belonged to King Kamehameha. But what's interesting is there's a movement that says we have to give the Hawaiian Islands back to King Kamehameha's rule. And because that would be just and right, Except he killed everybody on the other islands to take over the whole place.
Oh, man.
So it gets complicated, right? If you
a little bit of complication.
If you want to give the land back to the people who rightfully owned it, it's tough because around the world you find out that, well, they killed people to get it.
Oh, yeah.
So it is complicated. Yep. It doesn't mean that you don't want to do justly.
But so Oumuamua.
The history of the world is a mess.
You know, that's a good hangman word.
Oumuamua.
If you're playing Scrabble and you have a lot of vowels, like six vowels you got to get rid of, then if you remember that word,
Oumuamua.
All you need is two M's and a bunch of vowels.
Oumuamua. How did we find out about this challenge to Walt Brown's model?
Well, it's this listener in Florida. David E., he emailed us, and he said, I really love listening to Real Science Radio.
Yes.
It's absolutely awesome, and I really appreciate what you guys do. But then he asked this great question, is this asteroid is going at a hyperbolic orbit. We say orbit. It's not really an orbit. By the sun, and hyperbolic
it's
means
flying
it's, kind of,
through.
It's not like an ecliptical orbit. It's a hyperbolic line, which is kind of a barely bent line. The evidence shows that that thing's flying through the solar system. That it came outside the solar system because of the way it's flying through our solar system.
Yeah. So, in other words, it's not orbiting the sun. It's not on a parabolic orbit. It's on a hyperbolic orbit. And it's just passing through.
Yep.
And so, David from Lakeland, Florida, he's pointing out, he says, I really love Real Science Radio. It's awesome. I appreciate what you guys do. But have you taken a look at this? I wonder what Walt Brown would think about this, this new discovery. So, Fred, this asteroid, it's a weird looker.
It's a hot dog.
It's not like your typical asteroid. It looks more like an elongated submarine. It's about 100 meters wide and a kilometer long.
Yeah, so it's about 10 to 1 ratio.
10 to 1. It doesn't have any features that make it seem like a comet. In other words, it doesn't have a tail or multiple tails, and it has a reddish hue to it. Reddish.
So maybe iron oxide from our perspective.
Yes, from our perspective, this thing is part of the debris of the global flood, and so it's got iron oxide.
Wait a minute, you said global flood, so maybe this thing isn't just flying through our solar system?
Well, that's the challenge to Walt Brown's theory.
Yeah.
Because if all the debris of the solar system, the stuff that beat up the inner planets.
Yeah, especially the moon, right?
Right, and Mercury, Venus, Mars, Earth, too. We have craters. Mars, and even moons of the gas giants, and even Pluto and Charon. The bullets flying through the solar system that beat these things up, they wouldn't have been part of God's perfect creation. So we believe they were ejected debris during the launch of the fountains of the Great Deep.
Yeah. You know, God's foreknowledge, he made Jupiter so that if this had to happen, this global flood, then at least Jupiter would protect us from a lot of these asteroids.
Wow, a contingency plan. Yep. If ever there was a global flood of judgment, that's a good point because Jupiter shepherds the asteroids. And otherwise, they'd be flying all over the place and a dramatically more likely chance of slamming into the earth and killing people.
Yeah, lots of people.
So thank you, Lord, for Jupiter. That was
absolutely
a really good and really big idea.
Yeah.
The problem, though, as we've said, is this Oumuamua is not on a proper trajectory to look like it was shot out from the earth. Comets shot out from the earth, short period, long period comets, and they're orbiting the sun, asteroids orbiting the sun, meteoroids orbiting the sun. Mm-hmm. But this thing, no, it's on this hyperbolic orbit, like you said, not really an orbit. It's just flying through on its way. Who knows where?
Yeah.
So how could it be then? How could it be from the flood if its orbit says it came from outside of the solar system? That's a problem.
It is a problem. I mean, there are possibilities, and one would be some huge object, planet, whatever, throws off its trajectory.
Yeah, in fact,
that is a possibility.
Yeah, in fact, NASA has said that it could be that this thing was influenced by a protoplanet, a small planet, a large TNO, something beyond the orbit of Neptune, out there where all the thousands of TNOs are. perhaps an especially large one, so influenced the orbit of this particular asteroid that now it's no longer orbiting the sun, it's just flying through the solar system. Yeah. So that could be. So as a supporter of Walt Brown's hydroplate theory, I'm going to hold out for that's the actual explanation. That's the actual explanation.
Yeah.
Like you said earlier, it doesn't de facto falsify the hydroplate theory, but it doesn't fit in well like a thousand other observations.
Yeah. Even though, like we said earlier, there's 750,000 of
objects.
These objects in space that we know are within the solar system. They're right. Intra-solar system.
And so here's one.
Here's one example. We have to try to explain it. We don't know exactly why it's there.
Mm-hmm. Fred, it's been estimated that with our telescopes being as good as they are, for decades now, we should have been able to document a number of these things.
Yeah, if you have a worldview that's not biblical.
Yeah, maybe multiple ones per year flying through the solar system. But we haven't. So if your worldview is biblical, the Earth is young, the solar system is young, the universe is young, and this dangerous debris is a result of judgment and the sin, then we're going to find out the reddish color is from iron oxide, the iron mineral content from the crust of the Earth, and the water from the fountains of the great deep, and that's why it's reddish, and its orbit was modified by a massive TNO.
Yeah. And
we'll
if you have
out.
That out there, then the odds are over time, eventually you'll have one or two of these, you know?
Yeah. So we'll find out.
Yep.
All right. So, Fred Williams, hey, another fun Real Science Radio show.
That's right. And what's going to be, I think, even more fun is the debate.
Yes,
because this
tonight.
This doesn't happen very often.
At 6:30 this evening.
Yeah, two really good debaters. This should be a lot of fun.
Yes, at Denver Bible Church. If you're in Denver, come on out. It's in Wheat Ridge at 4085 Independence Court. And if you're out of town, then just go to our website, rsr.org, and you'll find the links. You could watch the live stream on YouTube, or, of course, you'll be able to get it in the future, either on YouTube or on Blu-ray or DVD or download.
That is so cool, Bob.
Yeah. So,
and we got a store at rsr.org/store.
Yes.
Could use your help for sure. And there's some great videos. My son and I watched the hydroplate video again.
You did?
During Thanksgiving.
Well, that's cool to hear. And, Fred, we have debates on there that are awesome.
Oh, yeah.
Including a debate at Denver's downtown Brown Palace.
Oh, that was so cool. The James White debate.
Yes, where I got to debate a leading theologian, Dr. James White. And it was on the same topic of the future. Is the future settled or open? So that was a stunner,
and
too.
I'll just say I sent you a picture that I mocked up. It was Ali knocking down Foreman, but I had your head on top of Ali, and I had James White on Foreman.
Well, that was nice of you, Fred. It was funny, too. All right, so this is Bob Benyart and Fred Williams for Real Science Radio. May God bless you.
Intelligent Design.